So we're currently in a cycle of teachings on the path of love, or the path of heart, or the path of devotion. And although in the yogic system, the path of love, the devotional path, bhakti yoga, some of the classic texts we might be studying would be the Bhakti Sutras, of course, which we've looked at over the years. Or there's another, a little bit more esoteric text, the Prajnaparidayam, a little bit more technical, a little bit more esoteric. These would be texts that we might look at. But I find myself just completely bored with text right now. Really, just, I can't even hardly read it. I read it and I'm just like, really? Seriously? Come on. So what I'm realizing is, for me, in the role of teaching on the path of love or the path of heart, it's impossible for me to embody this path, which is what I think good teaching always is, with text. Maybe at a certain point, maybe down the road. But right now the text is leaving me dry and uninspired. But the poetry I keep finding, the poetry just makes my heart soar. And since the path of love, the path of heart, the path of devotion is all about the uber opening of the heart, I mean, that's what it's really about. It's the experience. It's not about insight. It's not about understanding. It's not about wisdom. It's not about any of those things. It has absolutely nothing to do with the intellect. Zero. It is about the heart breaking wide open and burning everything inside of us that is not aligned. Everything that blocks our vision. We've been having a bit of a diversion, but a lovely diversion, looking at some small quotes from Carlos Castaneda's Don Juan books. And I was reading some quotes last night, and that one that just comes back to me over and over again is, the path of heart makes every experience of use to us. It's not that it's good or bad. It's that every experience is of use, and if it's not of use, discard it. And on the path of heart, and so as the heart is opening, it's burning up everything inside of us that's not of use. Not of use. And in the language of yoga, that would basically be the non-stop narrative of the so-called eye maker. Correct? Yes? You with me? You know, the eye maker has got to burn up in order to experience the great depth of the heart, which is the great depth of being. But you know, we can talk and blather away, but it's all words. We have to have the experience. We have to have the experience. And I personally don't think the texts really give us the experience, because we get too caught up trying to understand all the techniques, right? Patanjali Sutras, great. Because Patanjali system is not a path of heart. And so there the sutras make so much sense, you know. We want to study those sutras. We want to unpack those sutras. We want to really get every nuance of those sutras. And there's so much insight about the mind and the integration of the mind-body system. But on the path of heart, it's got to all just be thrown away or burned away. Now, the path of heart can be a very fierce path. And I think down the road, maybe a few weeks from now, I will bring in more examples of the fierceness of the heart path, the fire, the chasm of fire that is the path of heart. But I'm in a gentler mode right now. So we're going to keep it very gentle. And for now, tonight, next week, probably the week after, we're going to be immersing ourselves in the spectrum on the heart path that's all about the embrace of this life, the embrace of this world, the embrace of every moment. The whole notion of embracing rather than pushing away is very dear to my heart. And it's very much at the essential core of the path of heart. You know, we want to open into, again, and embrace whatever is arising, no matter what it may be. Once we've embraced it, we can determine if it's useful or not. There is a role for the intellect, but never before the heart is finished with its work. What we want to practice is heart discernment, not intellect discernment. Heart discrimination, not mind discrimination. And honestly, if I can inspire you to really, over the weeks or months or however long we find ourselves in this contemplation on the Great Heart, if I can inspire you to just keep making a relationship with your own heart. Get to know your own heart. Meet your own heart. Live from your own heart. Understand the language that your own heart speaks. Know your heart. And it's not so much know as live, or become, or embody, or simply embrace. Give the heart its due. And then we don't need text. We don't need anything but silence and the heart. And I can blather away up here, but all I'm doing is wasting our time. So let me read you some poems, tonight's poems. I think for me, poetry, or the poems that I've been bringing in, come so much from that place of deep heart, full-throated heart. And for me, they carry a certain shakti that I'm not feeling in the text. So I'll keep bringing in poetry until a text reaches out and grabs my heart, as they did once upon a time. Back when I was younger in my sadhana, I'm turning into an old crone. I have very little patience for mental gymnastics. The first poem is Dorothy Walters, who's a contemporary California poet, and she writes, "First, you must let your heart be broken open in a way you have never felt before, cannot imagine. First, you must let your heart be broken open in a way you have never felt before, cannot imagine. You will not know if what you are feeling is anguish or joy, something predestined or merely old wounds flowing once more, reminders of all that is unfinished in your life. Something will flood into your chest like air sweetened by desert honeysuckle, love that is too strong. You will stand there very still, not seeing what this is. Later, you will not remember any of this until the next time, when you will say, yes, yes, I have known this before. It has come again, just as your eyes fold under once more. I'll give it to you again. I know these poems require, they actually require at least three readings. So this is called Taken, and it's by Dorothy Walters. First, you must let your heart be broken open in a way you have never felt before, cannot imagine. You will not know if what you are feeling is anguish or joy, something predestined or merely old wounds flowing once more, reminders of all that is unfinished in your life. Something will flood into your chest like air sweetened by desert honeysuckle, love that is too strong. You will stand there very still, not seeing what this is. Later, you will not remember any of this until the next time. When you say, yes, yes, I have known this before, it has come again, just as your eyes fold under once more. And I'll give it to you one more time. And again, the title, it's called Taken. Think about that. Taken, taken, taken into that experience of love, right? Taken into the self. First, you must let your heart be broken open in a way you have never felt before, cannot imagine. You will not know if what you are feeling is anguish or joy, something predestined or merely old wounds flowing once more, reminders of all that is unfinished in your life. Something will flood into your chest like air sweetened by desert honeysuckle, love that is too strong. You will stand there very still, not seeing what this is. Later, you will not remember any of this until the next time, when you will say, yes, yes, I have known this before. It has come again, just as your eyes fold under once more. And Denise Levertov, The Secret, another contemporary American poet. Two girls discover the secret of life in a sudden line of poetry. I, who don't know the secret, wrote the line. They told me, through a third person, they had found it, but not what it was, not even what line it was. No doubt, by now, more than a week later, they have forgotten the secret, the line, the name of the poem. I love them for finding what I can't find, and for loving me for the line I wrote, and for forgetting it, so that 1,000 times, till death finds them, they may discover it again in other lines, in other happenings, and for wanting to know it, for assuming there is such a secret, yes, for that, most of all. Yeah, Denise Levertov. And again, the secret of life, right, which in the context of what we are, how can I say, I don't want to say thinking about, what we are sitting in the presence of is the power of love, right? The underlying essential stuff that pervades this entire universe, right? And as we know that, as we experience that, as we melt into that, life takes on a whole different flavor. Two girls discover the secret of life in a sudden line of poetry. I, who don't know the secret, wrote the line. They told me, through a third person, they had found it, but not what it was, not even what line it was. No doubt, by now, more than a week later, they have forgotten the secret, the line, the name of the poem. I love them for finding what I can't find, and for loving me for the line I wrote, and for forgetting it, so that 1,000 times, till death finds them, they may discover it again in other lines, in other happenings. And for wanting to know it, for assuming there is such a secret, yes, for that, most of all. And when she writes, I don't know the secret, I who don't know the secret wrote the line, she uses the word, no, I who don't know the secret wrote the line. Because we can't know the secret. We can be the secret. We can embody the secret. We can touch the secret. But we can't know the secret because the secret's way beyond knowing. Two girls discover the secret of life in a sudden line of poetry. I, who don't know the secret, wrote the line. They told me, through a third person, they had found it, but not what it was, not even what line it was. No doubt by now, more than a week later, they have forgotten the secret, the line, the name of the poem. I love them for finding what I can't find, and for loving me for the line I wrote, and for forgetting it, so that 1,000 times, till death finds them, they may discover it again in other lines, in other happenings, and for wanting to know it. For assuming there is such a secret, yes, for that, most of all. And that's how it goes, because we have to forget it over and over and over again, right? We have to be lost over and over and over again in order to be found again. And that secret, it hides underneath. It hides underneath the form. It hides inside the words. It hides in the spaces between the words. So we have to leap. And it's so easy to forget it. We think we've lost it. We never lose it. But we forget it. And then we remember again. I love them for finding what I can't find, and for loving me for the line I wrote, and for forgetting it, so that 1,000 times till death finds them, they may discover it again in other lines, in other happenings. Right? Because it's always the same thing. It's always there. And for wanting to know it, for assuming there is such a secret, yes, for that most of all. What an expression of faith, yeah? And for wanting to know it, for assuming there is such a secret, yes, for that most of all. And finally, Thomas Merton. This one's a little more difficult. He calls it, oh, sweet, irrational worship. I tell you, for a Zen practitioner and a Catholic monk, this guy was quite the bhakta. He writes, wind and a bob white and the afternoon sun. By ceasing to question the sun, I have become light. By ceasing to question the sun, I have become light. That's all the teaching we ever need. By ceasing to question the sun, I have become light. Wind and a bob white and the afternoon sun, by ceasing to question the sun, I have become light. Bird and wind, my leaves sing. I am earth. Earth. all these lighted things grow from my heart. A tall, spare pine stands like the initial of my first name when I had one. When I had a spirit. When I was on fire. When this valley was made out of fresh air, you spoke my name in naming your silence. Oh, sweet, irrational worship, I am earth, earth. My heart's love bursts with hay and flowers. I am a lake of blue air in which my own appointed place, field and valley, stand reflected. I am earth, earth. Out of my grass heart rises the bobwhite. Out of my nameless weeds is fullest worship. And in the same way that Merton in this poem is merging completely, it's a complete embrace of the earth. I am earth, earth. By ceasing to question the sun, I have become light, bird and wind. My leaves sing. All these lighted things grow from my heart. This is the ultimate bhakta experience. And again, I'll read it again before we glide into meditation, but let's chant the mantra Om Namah Shivaya first. And let your mind dissolve into the vibrations of the mantra. Maybe somebody could turn the lights way down. Let your mind dissolve into the subtle vibration of Om Namah Shivaya. And get that Om Namah Shivaya is the mantra of the great heart. You know, Shiva is sometimes referred to as the fire pit. You know, think of Shiva in the story from the Puranas where the poison is rising in the ocean of milk and he just takes it and drinks the poison to save life. Such a great act of love to take in the poison and transmute it in our body. So that the poison too becomes love. That's what the bhakti path is all about. All the great bhaktas, that's what they do. The stories of Mirabai, her mother-in-law, you know, gave her poison snakes. She touched them to her breast and they turned into nectar. This is the power of love. This is the power of the path of love. This is the power of the awakened, the awakening heart. The heart is so amazing. The heart turns poison into nectar. And that's what Don Juan is talking about when we allow ourselves to learn from experience, no matter how bloody, gory, painful, awful, brutal, devastating the experience may be. When we learn from it, we turn that poison into nectar. That's the power of the awakening heart. So we'll chant the mantra Om Namah Shivaya, and again, let your mind merge with the mantra. Let it become one with the mantra. And let it move into your entire physical body, subtle body, so that everything is vibrating with the stillness vibration of this mantra. So we'll chant for a while, and then we'll glide into meditation and I'll read the Merton again before we meditate.